Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Get us better away? Now, Charlie. Welcome to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. I'm your host, Chavo Guerrero Jr. Hey everybody, welcome to Suplexes and Cerveza with me, Chavo Guerrero. Appreciate you guys tuning in today. Another beautiful day in Southern California. I'm getting ready to get out there and hit some of these balls, these golf balls on the driving range and hopefully straighten out this drive and not suck. I'm going to play some golf tomorrow and I got to get out there and practice, you know. So what sucks about golf a lot of times is that, you know, with my lifestyle and my job, which is working out and training and staying fit, sometimes that's not always conducive to having a great golf swing. A big chest and big arms sometimes does not mean you hit the ball further. Sometimes it hinders your swing. So I'm always trying to balance working out and gaining muscle and leaning out with my golf swing. And I know, tough life. Poor me. Poor Chavo, right? I hope your day is going as awesome as mine. Today, I'm very happy to have this next guest on the pod. This guy, he and I have been up and down the road together, and our families have been up and down the roads together for years and years. I know you've heard that before, but it's true. With this wrestler, our families have been in the business from generations. And I always say that his family is probably the greatest wrestling family of all time. And it's hard to say because of there are so many great families out there, and not to take away from anybody, but pound for pound, the amount of wrestlers that they've put on the map, that Samoan dynasty is right up there with the best, if not the best. So today, my guest is the one and only Rikishi, a WWE Hall of Famer, one of many WWE Hall of Famers from the Samoan wrestling dynasty. All great guys, just don't piss them off. I always say that because, like the Guerreros, we're don't piss us off either, but we're not 300 pounds plus. Before we get started here, please hit that like button and that subscribe button to help the podcast keep going and bring you bigger and better guests. So thanks again for tuning in. And right now on Suplexes and Cervezas, we got my boy Rikishi. Yo, what's going on? My boy Rikishi is over here. Junior Fatu, man, what is going on, my brother? I miss you. Man. I miss you, bro.
Are we actually going to have a conversation, Chavo?
I think we're just going to keep giving you love to each other and say, I love you, I miss you. And then just start talking about burritos. I start talking about pineapples.
Man, I miss you a bunch, man. I just... And I'm just happy to be here, man, and be able to chop it up with you. I haven't seen you in a minute. You know, I've been seeing you busy out there adapting to the Hollywood vibe. And so congratulations to that, man. Congratulations to the show, too, as well, man.
Oh, yeah, man. Thank you. Thank you, man. And all the listeners out there, me and Rikishi go way back. Our families go way back. And we've known each other for a long time. And have, you know, just shot, been up and down the road together. And we just realized that we both got up from naps right now. we're old. We both got up naps going, oh, man, we got to do this podcast.
That's like a freaking booking. you got to book yourself to take a nap now.
Yeah. You're not kidding, right? You got 25 kids.
and counting. You know, I realized too when you reached out to me about coming on the show, man.
Yeah.
You know, our family's actually been connected for well over 75 years, man. You know, your pops to my uncle, Alfonsica, to Peter Maivia. I mean, this is a long relationship between the Guerreros and the dynasty, man.
Bro, I'm telling you right now,
The industry is probably wondering when the hell these Mexicans and Samoans going to leave.
I know, totally. All the white people are going, hey, what are these brown guys doing taking over?
I'm always saying this, when you can outwork all of us.
exactly. Bro, I'm telling you, the house I grew up in, my mom still owns it, and I'm redoing it for her. I think we're going to put it on the market. And back in the day, there was no cell phones, you know, so my dad used to always do all of his business, like, you know, in the garage. He'd be doing things on the garage phone, you know, the big long cord. And sometimes, you know, he would write stuff on the wall. He'd run out of paper, write stuff on the wall or something. So there's this little shelf where he would do, like, all his, like, work and stuff. And scratched into the paint, and I'm not kidding, I have a picture of it. I got to show you. It says P. Maivia, and his number starts scratched into the paint because he was like a new number. He had to write it down.
Damn. That's some old school stuff there, man. You know?
No, for sure. Oh, man, yeah.
Wow.
How did you get started in this business, dude? We've never talked about this. As much as we've known each other, and I know that you're connected, whatever. Who was the first of the Samoan dynasty to really start in the wrestling business?
Well, it's actually Uncle Peter Maivia.
Peter's your uncle.
Yeah, he's actually my uncle. He's the brother of Alfonsica, you know.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah,
but what happens? My grandparents. Alfonsica, his parents, actually adopted Uncle Peter Maivia into their family, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, the first one to put the Samoans, to open the door actually for the industry was Uncle Peter. Mm. And then, you know, that trickled into Uncle Alfonsica.
Right.
And which is Uncle Alfonsica is my mother. Older brothers. Okay. So my mother, other than siblings, she's the oldest out of the girls, which is a total of ten siblings altogether in Hawaii. Right. And so I actually fell into the industry being trained underneath Alfonsica. It was myself. It was Big Sam, which was my partner at SST, Big Rodney Yokozuna.
Yoku,
So we were like that next generation.
How about and TK, you know? Tonga Kid? That's your older brother, younger brother?
Tonga Kid, he's my younger brother.
But he started before you, right?
He actually started before me.
Right.
He was actually the youngest pro wrestler to ever sell out the Madison Square Garden back in the day with, you know, brother Jimmy Superfly Snuka.
I know.
You know, the legendary himself. And so, I was actually still in school, man, because he broke into the business before me, you know, and back in the day in San Francisco, California, you know, we were pretty living a rough life, like being on the streets. We were one of those kids that, you know, kind of just got into stuff. And being that my mother, you know, his brothers were in the industry, they called their brothers up and say, hey, we want you to take these boys here. You know, because if not, we're going to find these kids 6 feet deep in the streets of San Francisco. And
beat the shit out of these motherfuckers.
Oh, yeah. Right? I mean, hey, we got that from Uncle. And, you know, it was all like tough love for, you know, kind of straighten us out. You know, they were like, if you guys are going to break my sister's heart, so we're going to beat the hell out of you boys out here. So we kind of fell into it. He went first and he was there. He already started into the business. Tonga Kid did. And I was still in school. And when I came out of school, you know, my brother actually flew me up there for that match in the Madison Square Garden. Mm. So as an older brother, you know, I'm kind of, you know, nobody smart me up or nothing, right?
Right.
So I come over there, you know, my little brother's trying to show off to me, like, you know, I can see he got his draw and stuff. You know, it's like, you know, a bunch of $100 bills to me. Like, damn, man, you know, my little brother making money over here. Yeah. And so, you know, he put me up in a VIP in the Madison Square Garden. And dude, you know, I was amazed. It was sold out, you know, however many holds in the garden. And soon as, you know, he came out, you know, I'm looking, you know, I was just, you know, mesmerized, like, wow.
And he was over. As a kid, I remember seeing the Tonga Kid going, wow, like there was something about him. Like he was a kid. He looked like a man, but it was a kid. Like we reconnected to him, you know?
He was 17 years old, Chavo.
That's crazy. That's insane.
So he comes out, dude, and I see him, but I was actually just looking at the crowd, you know, just like, you know, seeing them pop and just react towards my brother. And then in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, I'm watching him go out there, do his things, you know, working with Piper and Orton and so forth.
That's right.
And keep in mind, he didn't have that much training.
Right.
He was just thrown in there during that time with Jimmy Snuka.
Right.
And it was then and there, you know, after we came back and Arnold Skolin, you know, he's sitting there with his cigar. he's giving out the advance, right? And the kid goes up there and he got like a $5,000 advance. $5,000 advance. And right then and there, I was like, damn.
I got to do this.
You make this type of money? And from there on, man, I got the itch. And I actually didn't come back home. I called my mom and I told my mother, I'm going to stay up here with Uncle Alpha, you know, there in Hampton, Connecticut. And the rest was history, man.
Wow. And I was, you know, and I don't even know if I even talked about that, but I know that the scar on your stomach, you were like involved in a drive-by, right? In San Francisco.
Yeah. You know, I think it was, Chavo, I think 1986. Wow. I was up, I just left Uncle Alpha's. I was training up there for 2 months. So when I came back, I was every bit of like, you know, 280 stocked. Stat you know, jacked. Yeah, I put on
that's
some weight.
Samoan jacked, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, I actually came over and, you know, to visit, you know, a friend of ours, a next door neighbor. And, you know, standing there by the kitchen, bro. And, you know, I was going into the refrigerator. You know, I had some brownies and stuff. So I was getting a glass of milk. So I popped this refrigerator over and my left arm goes in to grab the milk. And all of a sudden, ta, 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 ta. I didn't know it was, you know, it was there. All of a sudden, you know, we all hit the floor. And as we hit the floor, I spilled the gallon of milk on the floor. And before you know it, you know, I'm sitting there and then I see blood coming through. I didn't even know I got hit.
Wow.
So blood started gushing with the milk. I could see it. And that's when I went into, you know, selling mode. Oh my goodness. I got hit. I don't even know what it was. Like, was it you know, machine gun or what, but I got hit by a 22. And so they called the freaking ambulance. And this is right down the street, maybe about 10 houses from where we live at. They called the ambulance and the ambulance came over. One of my cousins ran and called my mother, you know, to bring her that, you know, I got hit, you know. So they're trying to carry me down these, you know, crooked steps. And the further I got down, you know, I was kind of losing, like, you know, starting to pass out.
Yeah.
And as I got into the ambulance, you know, I'm starting to fade out. And the last thing I seen was my mother's face. And Mama boom, Keesh. I was out. Wow. And they told me I was dead for 3 minutes, which was a shoot.
Wow. I didn't know that.
I was dead for 3 minutes. And, you know, I was in the hospital for 2 months. But I kicked out. And, you know, when you're laying in a hospital, Chavo, and, you know, you realize this is real, something that, you know, I could have been gone and given a second chance to live. You know, I was already a religious kid anyway, but I was a bad religious kid. And that really checked me from there, which I was 19 and my priorities came correct. meaning that, you know, I wasn't, it was time for me to, you know, do what I was supposed to do, whatever that is, you know, given a second chance to live. And so that was that. Hussein, you know, when you have, you know, I thank God, man, every day, like, I had no idea this crazy business of professional wrestling. You know, this, the smokes and mirrors of comes with the industry. And had I had, had I not have a close knit family around me and always, you know, being around my uncles and, you know, those that paved the way before us, it really, really helped me, you know, survive in this industry. And, you know, I just knew that I was blessed to give a second chance. It's time for me to go to work, you know? And so here it is.
Wow, man. Dude, I didn't know that, man. That's crazy, man. You almost died, or you died at 19 and then been killing towns ever since.
And look,
you've been killing you've been killing the crowds ever since.
Every single arena I go to, man. And you know what's weird too? You know when Ecky finally broke in.
Yeah.
Right? And Ecky's name.
Umaga was his youngest brother, right?
Yes. Him and Matthew, which is Rosie, right? Who's Roman Reigns' older brother. Right. But check this out. What was weird was when he came in, his first name as a tag team was called 3 Minutes.
Mm. Wow. Yeah.
That's some weird shit, ain't it?
I know, man. 3 Minutes. That's right. 3 Minutes. I remember that one. Yeah.
You know,
wow, that's crazy, man.
So I'm happy to, you know, I'm happy to see the family continue moving forward, you know, all the way from my kids to Roman and the legacy go. I think we're 18 strong past president.
I've said it before, and people ask me, hey, who's the greatest wrestling family? And you know, and there's so many great families out there, and I tell them, I got the greatest wrestling family, I believe, is the Samoan dynasty, because there's so many of you guys that just keep going. And I don't believe you get the recognition that you guys deserve, because how many WWE champions have you had? How many Hall of Famers there? How many people in the business? I mean, it's crazy to me, like way more than anybody, way more than the Harts, way more than the Guerreros, way more than the Orns, way more than the McMahons, everybody. I'm telling you, I think the Samoans are that dynasty is the greatest wrestling family out there, man.
Hey, you know this too, Chavo, you know, you two coming from a big family.
Right.
You know, I want to set the record straight, because I get a lot of these type of questions all the time, meaning that, you know, just because we come from a family that's a big family that's before us, it's a very hard situation. Meaning when we first broke in, we have our uncles. And so it's that pressure.
I know.
Knowing that how good my uncles were, like me and Sammy come in, like, damn, do we want to do this? Or are we as good as them? Or what's going
to
happen?
Big shoes to fill, bro. Big shoes to fill. And what happens is you get the door opens easier for you, but when you step through, they expect you to be as good as them, which is impossible.
Yeah. And you know, and that's what I think, you know, what happened to us is that inside competition in the family, you know, is you're going to step in. There's not only the pressure of the name you're carrying. It's not only the pressure of the culture of the family that comes with it. And then yourself dealing with how the business is. And so when we come through, it was every time we step through those ropes, you know, it's serious business for us. You know, maybe we might not be figured in, but damn it, my uncles always told us, if they don't figure you in, you make noise with your action in the ring. You That's make noise.
That's what they told me. They go, you'd be so good that they have no choice but to push you and use you. That's how you get, because what happens in this business and a lot, you see it. We see it because we were small guys in this giant's business that we had to bam. We had to be extra, extra good. You know, and none of us are over 6 foot. None of the Guerreros are over 6 foot. And in this business, especially like in my dad's era, they were monsters. Everybody, you know, the 70s, the 80s, you had to be 6 foot five, 300 pounds just to even make it through the door. So like you had to be extra good. And that's what was explained to me when I first started. Eddie pulled me aside and he goes like, "Hey man," he goes, "I know you're getting there. Keep pushing, keep pushing." He goes, "That right. talent is there. Cream always rises to the top." Mm. He goes, "Just be patient. It's there. It's going to come out." He goes, "Don't listen to anybody. Don't listen to the haters." 'Cause there's a lot of haters out there. Mm-hmm. And every one of us had it. They said to my dad, "You'll never be as good as your father." His brothers, "You'll never be as good as Chavo Senior." Mm-hmm. To Eddie, they said, "You'll never be as good as your brothers." To me, they ever said, "You'll never be as good as Eddie and them." And you're who you are. You come out we're all better at things than the other people, mm-hmm. and worse at things than the other people. So we're our own person. And I know that that's what you guys had to realize also, that this is your shoes, other people's shoes. Now they may be the same style as the other shoes, but they're your own shoes to fill, you know?
Yeah. And so, you know, it's the pressure coming from a big family in the industry.
And a good family, like great family. Everybody's great in that family. Every one of those Samoans can work.
And you know, and that's another thing that helps too. Can you imagine if you're in this big family in the industry and we're all just all over the place, not on the same accord? Everybody's just, you know, that's different, right. Hating on each other. You know, so, you know, I really, really, you know, and thankful for our culture. When we came into this industry of professional wrestling, our culture as Samoans and Polynesian, you know, same thing like lucha, like Latino, it grounds you, cements your feet to the ground where you don't easily get mixed up in the smokes and mirrors that comes with the industry. Before nobody knows you, now they know you. Oh, but now your head done got wide and huge. Like you can't even talk to the next door neighbor no more that used to be your friend growing up, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So it's those little in-between things that is very, very important for everyone to know that are wanting to come into this crazy industry of professional wrestling. It's a good industry, but it can only get as crazy and wild as you let it go to be, you know? We're blessed to be from both sides of our family, Chavo. I'm grateful, and I'm sure you are, absolutely. To be able to come and represent our family, and we keep moving forward and keep training the new generation. You got cousins, nephews that are coming through, and that's what we do.
Well, I'm with you on that, the same thing. And it's funny because thank God for our families, because not only did they teach us, but they kept us humble, because there's other people, you know, like, "Hey, man, you're doing really great. God, you're so good." And you can easily get a big head. And then all of a sudden you'll have a match, and then one of your family members will call you, go, "Hey, man, that was the shits."
You know? Yeah, but that's the family member keeping it real, right?
That's right. That's right. That sucked.
They got to realize. People got to realize when people come to you, say, "That match was great, man. You killed it out there." Deep inside, you know this, Chavo. When you're walking back to the locker, walking up that ramp, going to the locker, you know deep inside you could have done better.
That's right.
But there's people that are telling you blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we're taught you don't have to look for validation. Right. You know it yourself.
And you know when you have a good match and when you don't have a good match. And remember how you know, everybody wants that recognition from Vince McMahon as you come through the curtain, and, you know, you want him to stand up and clap. But it really just depends on what kind of mood he's in a lot of times. Because you could have a great match and he could just, like, give you a nod. So I got to the point at the end to where I was like, I wouldn't even really kind of look at him. I would just keep come in and do my thing, because I knew when I had a good match. And I knew when I didn't have a good match, and I didn't need that validation from him anymore. Like I used to, I would always come through that curtain when I first started and look at him like, "Was that okay? Hey, was that okay?" You know? And at the end, man, I was like, "Hey dude, I'm good. I know."
You know that, you know, to be honest, that never really bothered me when I came through the curtains. You know, again, I'm going back to my humble beginnings of my team. If I didn't need to get validation from my own uncles who brought me into the business, then it wasn't no biggie for me not to get validation from Vince. I was paid to do my job. I came in, I did the best. I don't know myself when I come through that curtain, I killed it. Or I know when I come through, it was the shit, so I could have done better.
Right, right.
Totally. So,
no, that's true, man. Your uncle's off in Sika. Mm-hmm. They trained you. What was your first territory?
I was actually in Connecticut.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, Uncle Alpha and them were still into WWF back in the day.
Okay.
So my training, you know how they do all these vignettes. If you go back, you see those old WWF DVDs that they show. And so I used to be
keep
like,
they have everything, every footage you go to, they have all of that. Yeah.
So you'll see me. I was like a young, you know, 19 year old kid, but I would be the extras. I would be in there, and that training, just being around all the guys you see on TV. But then, wait a minute, they don't act like how they're on TV. You know what I mean? And you're a young kid, then you see that, you know, you see like Andre the Giant, and they're all, you know, just, you know, ribbing each other, what the boys call ribs.
Right.
And then I see the, you know, I'm starting to see the birth of everything, how this thing works. So it was all that, you know. I really didn't have a territory to start. My territory was, you know, running shows with my uncles after they left WWF. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we built the ring, Javo. We put up the ring, drive the ring truck. I did that so long. It's almost like I didn't want to go in professional wrestling.
Right.
I was like, damn it. What does this have to do with, you know, going to train
and
pro wrestling?
Wrestle in it and tear it down and then drive it back. Yeah, man. And trust me. Yeah, I remember.
My actually, you know, first time jumping in the ring was actually when I was there in New Haven, Connecticut, and uncles were still with the WWF back in the day. So it was a battle royal. One of the boys didn't show up. Our home was right down the street from New Haven Coliseum. And I think it was Chief J. Strongbow. Or Tony Garea, I think, back in the day. Uh-huh. That's how long Tony Garea has been an agent over there at WWE.
Back in the day, right?
Yeah. So they came and somebody didn't show up. And then, you know, somehow my name popped up while I was cleaning. You know, they trained me to walk in the dressing room. I fix all the seats, you know, green boy stuff.
Right.
You make sure all the seats is there.
Yeah, you know. I did the same thing.
And they threw the freak and he said, hey. He gave me some tights and some knee pads. He said, you're going to be in a battle royal. So I had a little bit of knowledge of how it worked. You know, I kind of knew my fundamentals, how to take a bump, but that was it. I didn't know how to throw a punch. I didn't know how to throw a kick or none.
Right.
So I was supposed to come in there number three and go out number four, right? As soon as the four. So I go in there number three. It's 18,000 field people. Man, you know that electricity.
You know
when you come out there, they weren't cheering for me because they know who the hell I was.
Right.
But just to feel that energy, I was in the ring with Andre the Giant, Big John Studd, the Road Warriors, SD Jones, Rene Goulet. I mean, these are all Charlie Fulton.
Oh wow, David
Schultz.
Wow.
And I'm a young kid.
Yeah.
Kamala. So I get in there and then,
what name did you come in under?
This was a Lofa or something, some bullshit name that but they just gave, who knows?
And next to the ring, a Lofa, you're like,
so I get in there, start running around. I was supposed to go out number four. As soon as it came to number four, I wouldn't go out because I was having too much fun. So my uncles came number five, they came in there and just slapped the shit out of me, boom. And threw me right out. Get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And that was my debut. That was my first time. And once you get in when you train and then you get in front of a live crowd.
Right.
I knew then that's what I wanted to do. It's that feeling that you can never buy anywhere. You know, you got to be in that ring to be able to feel that. And that passion never left, you know,
and there's
35 years later.
There's no drug like it, man. Being in that ring and feeling after having a great match in front of a great, like a huge, great crowd, there's no feeling like it. I don't care. And we're always chasing it. That's with wrestlers. Like, we're always chasing that feeling because it's crazy, man. It's one of those things. Like, I used to dream about it afterwards and like have a great match. And I couldn't even sleep. I'd go to my bed and I'd just be thinking about the match. Like, wow.
And
like, okay, good night. See you later. How was that match? Yeah, whatever. Good night.
But back was that a good match? Sure, it was. Yeah, have a good one. I'll see you tomorrow. Time for the nap.
Exactly.
Oh, man. But that's what makes you great, man. Yeah. You know, you got to have that type of attitude in this industry. If you're in there just to flatline, you're just satisfied with how your performance is, you'll never go to that next level, you know? Longevity would never apply to your career in professional wrestling, because pro wrestling can break you or it can make you.
Huge. Mine was just a little different, because as a kid, you know, we had a wrestling ring in our backyard. So my grandfather and my dad, we were already in the business, basically born into it. And we were already going to the arenas and kind of, you know, setting things up. And I grew up with Roddy Piper at the house and all the guys, Mil Máscara.
Well, that's just normal for you, right?
It was just
it
normal,
felt just
man.
Normal as a kid.
Yeah, I didn't know anything. I didn't, you know, it's like they never had to smarten me up, anything. They never told me anything. Thing, but I just knew how it worked, and you know, and just see my dad beat up and come home, and I knew that this thing's it's real. It may be entertainment, but it's real. Like, these guys are beating crap out of each other, especially back then, you know.
Yeah, you know, that gravity don't sell for nothing. You know, when they pick you up to slam you, it's every bit of, if you don't know how to take that correct fall and hitting that 3/4 plywood and that steel post ring, you know, I don't give a damn how good you are, that damn ring wins every night.
That's right. That's right. And then especially with you guys' size, that's what I say. Like, a lot of people, like that people ask me, how come, you know, you wrestled for 20 plus years and your body's pretty good. And I go, you know, what would save me is that I'm not 300 pounds, because your bones and my bones is the same. Our ligaments are the same. It just, you're 300 pounds falling every night, you know, and that's, you know, that's tough on your body, you know, 300 plus, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, and another thing is, like, you know, when they ask me that, it's a technique. It's what was taught to us. Like, we were taught to perfect that bump. That's you right. know, we knew what size, you know, my uncle said, look in front of you. When we look in front of that mirror and we see what type of size that person is in front of that mirror, automatically it's going to tell me how I need to bump. And that same technique, 35 years later, it never changes. And so longevity, and not to mention the smarts in there. There's certain things that we let people do to us in the ring. There's certain things where they'll try. Oh, no. You hit the ropes. I'll be right here.
No.
You go over the top rope. I'll be the one throwing you over. See, those type of smarts in between.
I'll come off and I'll give you a splash. You're like, I'll move. No,
exactly.
It's not happening.
You know, and a lot of times, like, you know, those that just, you know, the choices that they make in there, it's not just being a good athlete, but you have to be very, very smart that in ring, in the squared circle, and also outside of the squared circle.
Especially
because
outside.
If you're not today, man, you better be 10 times smart today. With a lot of these social medias, Instagram, Twitter. I mean, nowadays,
absolutely.
Chavo, we couldn't even film a damn thing in the locker room back in the day.
That's right.
That was just forbidden.
Yeah.
Nowadays, shit.
You had a camera in the locker room, they would kick you out of the locker. Get the hell out of here. Now everybody's on their phone, and that's just what they do, you know?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, so the knowledge that we have been blessed with from back in the day, from, you know, our fathers, our uncles, that are no longer here with more, those teachings there has stuck with us through the years. And look where we're at now. We are still grinding. We see it coming a mile away, and we can still outwork anybody else that wants to step up to us.
That's true.
We don't have to go there no more.
Right. And you know, which people ask me a lot of times, and I was talking to Fit Finley about this, cause he's a third generation wrestler also. Mm. And people they ask me sometimes like, God, you know, Chow, how do you know that? Like, who taught you that? I don't know. I don't know who taught me that. I just know it. And I don't know how I know it. I just do. But that's 75, 85 years of wrestling in their blood that just instilled in you. So I'm sure there's a lot that you just learned somehow. You don't know how. No one actually ever said, okay, do this. You just, like, your instincts.
Instincts.
Yeah, right?
It's just your surroundings, Chavo, from back in the day. Like, it wasn't even taught you. If you see it every day, you hear it every day, you just know how it goes after, you know. And some family members, you know, that decide to come into the industry, some get it, some don't. So not necessarily we who we are, meaning every single one of us is great. No, it doesn't work that way, you know.
There's a lot of out of work second and third generation wrestlers that are out of work that don't have, that never made it, you know, a lot. Yeah, I see that, man. And
so it's a lot of pressure, man.
I don't know if you know this. My very first WWE main event was me and Eddie against you and Edge. at a house show. And that was our first main, my first main event ever. Mm-hmm. At, I don't think in any company. And for some, we were doing the Los Guerreros, you know, Los Guerreros gimmick tag team, you know, light sheet steel. And yeah. They attacked, you know, we wrestled you guys 100 times. Thousands.
Yeah. That's why I can't remember. We worked so many times and every single one of the time we worked was great.
That's right. You know? That's right. But it was a house show, and it was, I think you, it was you and Edge.
I bet you it was a lot of ribbon if it was a house show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man, for sure. But that was my very first main event, man, ever. That's pretty, that's one of those that like, I remember, I don't know what town it was, but I think I have my booking sheet somewhere still where I wrote, you know, kind of, you know, who the, I used to do that all the time just to match the pay up, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought for sure, man, main event, we're going to get paid great. And then I got my check. I'm like, wah, wah.
Yeah, owe the company money.
Yeah, exactly. After my draw, I'm like, what do you mean I owe 50 bucks?
Well, that was such a beautiful thing, you know, in this industry. You know, when we worked against you guys, it's always what we call a night off. You know, right? But when you work against, when you come in the locker room, you see your name against somebody. And that somebody is just like, oh, damn.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I got to work tonight.
I got to work tonight.
Yeah.
So I was so, you know, every time that we got to mix it up, we be with you and Eddie or, you know, your pops and so forth. It's always was that chemistry, man. It was that chemistry that just we just meshed together. And that's what you try to find in this industry when you're working with certain people. You want to have that every night. But unfortunately, we don't get it every night because not everybody works like us.
Right. No, it's true. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
No, you've had many gimmicks like I have. Probably, I don't know if more, but you've had a lot. You start off when you guys were the Samoan SWAT team. Total. I mean, we remember. I love that name. I was like, that's awesome. But you guys were killing. Was that your cousin? Was that Sam?
That was Sam. Yeah, that's Alpha's older son.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got you guys come. I knew you guys would kill that. And you were in WCW first, right? Mm-hmm. With that?
my uncle sent us all over before we even hit the scene of TV. We went to Puerto Rico. We won the belts in Puerto Rico. Just green kids now, right?
Right.
So we win the belts back in the day. Kind of a little bit of big head kind of happened.
Of course.
But like, oh shit, we got the damn tag team belts. We gonna make some money. That's all we chased was the money. Yeah, and when we got our freaking paychecks, it was like, we made less than when we had the belts. We threw the belts away. We don't need the belts. It's just heavy in our bags. So,
right.
So we were there for like, we were out there for like 2 months. And then
was business good then?
Business was good, you know?
Because, man, Puerto Rico was a hot territory back then. Man, hot, hot, hot. Like, man, those crowds were like, man, they'd kill you. You got to stab you if you didn't watch it.
It was one of the easiest crowds to work, though, right?
I love, yeah.
You get out there, man, it's just, I mean, it was a good environment, you know, as far as in the arenas to work with. It was kind of rough to be able to outside living after the arena.
Right, yeah,
you know, it's just you got to last that was that 18 hours for the next booking, the next following town. But, you know, and so we were there and it was, 2 months. And then we bounced out of there. And then we actually were, I think we went to Montreal, Canada with Dino Bravo.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And so we worked up there for like, I don't know, Chavo, I think it was the late 89 or something like that. We were there
you go from warm to freezing, right? To cold.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You got to go wherever the money's go, where that's it's supposed to be. Right.
Right.
And so when you're in a different territory, we went there to Canada. I think we were there for like a couple years. And then we finally got a chance to get into, which was our first international TV, which was down with the Von Erichs in Dallas, Texas, the Sportatorium.
World Class Championship Wrestling, WCCW. Wow,
right.
You were the Von Erichs too. That's awesome.
And so when we came there, dude, that was the birth of the Samoan SWAT team. And when we came there, do we watch the Von Erichs on TV?
Right.
We seen them. We don't know them personally. My uncles know, you know, the father and so forth. And so, you know, we knew that, you know, this was our time for the world to see us. And our main goal was to have the bigger companies, if we were shooting for WWF, WWE, that's where we wanted to go. And so we were there for like 3 years, man. And, you know, $30 a night, you know, traveling here and there. You know, I had like I had like a S10 Blazer, man, Chevy Blazer. My parents let me have it. And I was making these towns and so forth. And, you know, back in the day, I had my twin boys, which is who you see out there now. I used to lay that Blazer down, Chavo. And I would get hotel blankets and lay it in the back. Because if you're making $30, I'd rather buy food for my kids and gas versus I couldn't afford a hotel. Some nights we didn't eat, like, you know, me and my ex didn't eat. Yeah. And so, you know, we humped it out. You know, it was plenty of times, like I told Sammy, I was ready to quit because I had a family early. And I didn't think I was going to make
people
it.
Don't know. People don't, they don't know that if you weren't like a, you know, like they think that all the wrestlers were millionaires, you're on TV, you made so much money. And back then they really didn't, you know, the top guys and maybe the WWE did, but you didn't make a lot of money back then. And I'm glad to see that it's changed a lot and now people are actually doing well. And that's awesome. But really back in the day, I mean, if you're watching, Dwayne Johnson's new show, Young Rock, you know, they're showing the story of that. They were living in hotels and stuff, you know, another one of your family members, you know, so they were living in hotels and, you know, just trying to make it. And you had money and then you didn't have money and you'd go to Japan and get some money and then you had no money. And yeah, man.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You learn to make it work.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, there was a lot of, you know, testing
testimonial, you know, fortitude.
My thoughts back in the day. Do I want to do this? Because I'm looking, I got a family.
Yeah.
Do I want to put them through this? You know, I'm already suffering by myself, barely take care of myself.
Right.
But anyhow, so that, you know, those sleepless nights when you look in the back and you see your kids there, you know, laying down. For me, it's like I gotta make it. I have no choice. I gotta, you know, I can't have my kids be sleeping in Aston Blazer. Right. For the rest of this, you know. And so that drive there, Chavo, just that's when me and Sammy came out. We talked about because he was doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And we just came on TV and just start fucking whooping everybody's ass. Right. I mean, it was that fire underneath that. There was no turning back forth. So we got over so quick within a month there. They booked us against the Von Erichs. Now, we kind of know them, you know, coming through the locker room. But sure. During the day there, you know, we never really see
which Von Erichs, Kevin and Kerry?
Kevin and Kerry.
Okay, wow.
The two stiffest one. The two stiffest one. And so when we finally got with them, the angle starts, you know, Kerry's coming through my back. I mean, Kevin, he's actually coming through my back. And Sammy sees him. He's getting ready to wail a chair on me. Mm-hmm. Now, we've watched them hit people with chairs over there in Texas. Yeah. Dude, they used to fuck people up.
I know.
Like, it got to a point to where, you know, concussions and stuff, like, really can end your career.
Absolutely.
You know, they hit you wrong in the back of your head and your vertebrae. It
can kill you.
It can kill you, exactly. Yeah. So when Sammy seen that, and this is that part where we're hungry Samoans, before he even got a chance to bring that chair down, out of nowhere, Sammy just, I mean, whacked him with the damn another chair. Now, everybody in the locker rooms, when they seen that we're just coming in, when they seen that, they for sure thought we were fired because we just beat up the boss's sons and blah, blah, blah. So we come back in the locker room. Here comes Kerry and Kevin. And we're sitting there and said, all right, if this shit jump off, you grab that chair. I'm going to grab this this bat here beside me and let's get it on. You know,
right.
As soon as they came in, there was that pause and all of a sudden, man, that was good shit, guys. That was good. And we knew then, okay, these motherfuckers, this right up our alley then. Right. These dudes are crazy. And boom, so we formed that relationship with the Von Erichs. Before you know it, we were main event with them all over the place because they just like how we work,
right?
You know, being snug. So, and so that was there. And then, you know, years later, we got the call from Paul Heyman. And Paul was up there in NWA. And, you know, we still had to strap for Texas. And we were supposed to be in Oklahoma this one weekend. But instead, we drove all the way to Atlanta, Georgia from Texas. And they were waiting for us to come to the show in Oklahoma. And before you know it, they turned on. We were on TV debuting for NWA. And the rest was history. By the time we came out, we got an offer from a contract for NWA, and we were the first Paul Heyman cats to really, you know, be with Paul.
Wow!
Back in the day, so we came back, Oos, and we did business. We dropped the belts to the Von Erichs, and then turned around, went to NWA. So, in our mind, okay, we're one step. We were happy. Now we got some real money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we're getting a weekly paycheck. So we can see we can afford apartments now. Yeah, we can afford.
I can buy shoes for my kids.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So everything, you know, now you come home, you're kind of like, okay, this is kind of getting normal life now. You know, you got a place for your kids, your family. The refrigerator is full. I'm still doing what I love and blah, blah, blah. And I don't have to go too far now. So, but there was always that one thing, Tavo, because you know, back in the day, you see NWA, then you see WWF. And it's, you can always see that WWF, this is the show.
That's right.
This always is the show.
They were always the NFL, man, the NFL of the big leagues, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, we sat there. We were happy that we got contracts, like two-year contract, but we were already plotting.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to be here 2 years, and then just, you know, let's make 2 years of getting over. Let's make a name for ourselves here. That way, right, by the time, you know, WWE sees us, we got some type of value. We can, you know, kind of call our own number or at least have some type of, you know, negotiations when we come through with WWE.
Right.
And, you know, when that time came, man, you know, we stepped through. It was easy because now Uncle Alpha stepped in the picture.
Mm.
And once Uncle Alpha stepped in the picture, it was an easy cut and dry deal because he had that good relationship with Vince.
He had that stroke too, right?
He had that stroke.
Yep.
But here's the other part. The other part is he was bringing in a bunch of young horses because we were still young, early 20s. Something. He was bringing in a bunch of young horses that was primed and that was ready to be able to dance with anybody in the company. And so longevity applies to that. You know, and so by the time we came through, you know, it was just a matter of just, you know, keeping your nose clean and don't get caught up with, you know, with all the bullshit outside of professional wrestling, you know,
very easy to do.
Yeah. And then that locker room etiquette, we sit in the corner and just kind of smile at everybody, but you can kind of see all the shit happening in front of your eyes.
Oh yeah. No, for sure. Politics, bro. That's the politics in pro wrestling. A lot of people don't know that's there, but and also, like, we're on the road all the time, and what people don't understand is that because we're on the road 300 days a year, and back then was probably more, that you're always in a hotel room. You're always, so if you just sat in a hotel room all the time, you'd go crazy. You know, I'm not saying you have to go out and party all the time, but, you know, you go down and go grab something to eat. You got to get out. You hang with your boys, you know, and if you don't, then it's just a tough life. And it's a lonely life anyways. That's what we're always together with the guys, you know?
Yeah. Hey, you know, it is. It's like, you know, whether we like it or not, it's a second family out there.
It really is.
We see each other every day. You know, they talk about different hotels, be it expensive or cheap hotel. The hallway's a hallway. It's just other ones are cleaner, other ones are dirty.
That's right.
But you see the same person, and we were always taught it's not how much money you make on the road, it's how much you save.
That's right. Absolutely.
And so, you know, that OG knowledge, you know, being taught and coming back from family members, it really, really, you know, for me, I can say it really helped my career.
Good.
And so now full circle around, you know, here I am, 55 and alive. And that's my passion now is just to be able to train kids, you know, to get it. I let them know that, you know, the kids, like, man, you guys have so much opportunity right now. It's so easy for you kids right now. All you got to do is master the craft and understands the ins and outs, and you're golden. You know.
So when do the head shrinkers come into play? Because you're part of the head shrinkers also.
Yeah, well, SST ended right there in NWA. Uh-huh. When we left to go to New York, that was the birth of the head shrinkers with Uncle Alpha.
Right, the head shrinkers, okay.
Yeah, and so I believe the head shrinkers, I can't remember, Tom. I think it ran for like 3 years or something like that, or a couple of years. And then
the head shrinkers,
the fiasco.
Yeah, well, then after the head shrinkers, then you're the Sultan, right? You're the Sultan for a while?
Actually, the head shrinkers,
what happened?
They let Sammy go. Mm-hmm. Then Uncle Alpha left. And now I was there, you know, for some reason they decided to keep me, you know, and.
Were you doing the Make a Difference?
Well, here's what happened, because now the head shrinkers are put on the shelf now. And right. So they try to repackage the head shrinker with me and a barbarian.
Oh,
boy. And they brought in, you know, Captain Lou, you know, to be a part of that. But it just, you know how that is when you
it's
try
not like
to
the original, bro. It's not the original. You can't.
I guess they were just trying to, you know, keep me working because they were paying me weekly anyways. They wanted me to earn that paycheck.
Yeah, yeah.
But
totally.
That didn't last too long. You know, me and Barb, we messed together, but it wasn't like how I messed with Sammy. And
it's different,
you know,
because you guys aren't you weren't like blood related, right?
Yeah, yes. You know, again, I wasn't really around Barbarian.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I didn't know. Yeah, I kind of know how he worked, but, you know, it's that feeling like I had to call we had to call everything to communicate with Sammy. Right. With Sammy, I'm sure like you and Eddie, you just look at each other. You see his ring awareness, where he's at. He don't even have to, I don't even have to call it. He don't have to call it. I already know where to go. And
exactly. People would ask always with me and Eddie, like, gosh, you guys are good. How did you know? And I go, man, we've been doing this since we were kids. Like, we grew up together. Well, I know what he's thinking. He knows what I'm thinking. I remember one time we were wrestling him. I think we were wrestling Edge and Rey Mysterio. And he's choking, like, Edge on the rope across the ring. And usually Eddie would never just leave him and, like, tag me out. This time, I don't know why, he's choking Edge. The referee is looking at Ray. Eddie leaves Edge there, rolls to me, tags me. I do like a flip in and go right to Edge. And Edge kind of looks up and goes, when did you get in the ring? Like, he had no clue. He thought it was still Eddie. Mm-hmm. And even the referee turns around and he's like, when did that happen? You know, because we just knew. Like, it was that was not a spot that was not caught. It just happened. Like, I just knew he knew. It's crazy, right? That sixth sense.
That's that backyard spots for growing up as kids.
Yeah,
that instincts, you know.
That's right. That's right. That's right. I'm sure your boys got it. Your boys together have it, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, so me and Barb, we didn't last that long, so they were put on the shelf. And then after that, you know, it goes back to creative control and let's find something for this kid.
Right.
He's a good kid. We want like to leave him around. Blah blah. As for me,
throw some shit against the wall and see if it sticks.
See if it sticks, right?
I got some see as it sticks moments.
Yeah, for me, it's like, you know, I was already kind of going downhill because now, you know, my family members that was with me are no longer in the, you know, with me in the company. Right. So now it's like, okay, now I'm by myself. Now what do I do next? For me, the most important thing for me, Chavo, was to keep a paycheck. Coming through every that was the most important thing. Other than other stuff that comes with the industry, the characters, I already was confident that I can make any character stick. It's just a point. I'll do my job, whether the company will do their job of pushing it.
Right.
And so I went to something about, you know, was what I thought. You know, I felt, well, why don't I try to do this? What really happened to me, which was going back to the gunshot. Trying to make a difference. I thought of, you know, coming out as a baby face and just trying to do something like a positive message. Let what happened to me, you know, be that, right? A lesson for. And that came, became out. I was with it, but just the way how it was, it wasn't no fire behind it.
Right.
They didn't put no gas behind it through the company. So I kind of just fell in the shuffle.
No, yeah, okay, I hear. Yeah.
And then boom.
You did. I remember that gimmick. You did make a difference. You made a difference on my eyes. You made them hurt.
They hurt my damn eyes putting that damn costume on. You know, when I was like the first doink.
I remember seeing that and going like, all right, let's see what this was. And it wasn't like there was no steam behind it. I remember seeing that and kind of going like, all right, well, you were still the same guy. Just you're going from before this savage.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden to, you know, positive and just, you know, it is. You just try to make it work. And trust me, I got Kerwin White stuff. You just try to make it work, dude.
What was it at work was we was getting paid every week.
That's right. Right? That's right. Yeah.
And so
you either do it and to the best of your ability, or you say no and get fired. That's right. Kind of what it is, you know?
And so I came from, you know, making the difference, and that fell through.
Right.
And then next year, you know, still under contract. It was weird because every time that I would, go into a different character, you know, it was like my 90 days clause was coming up, right. You know, which was cool because when they flopped, now I'm just sitting at home getting paid. And, you know, I was one of those guys, I would never call the office. Hey, do you have something for me? This, you know, I was in a locker room with Ron Simmons. Ron Simmons just to tell me, hey kid, just lay low. Don't call them people and bother them people for a damn character. You're getting paid every damn week, ain't you? I said, yes, sir. He says, all right. Go ahead and just enjoy. Just stay out of their way. Let them do their thing. So anyways, they finally, I guess it was ready. I was in Memphis, Tennessee. I've been off for a minute from doing the Sultan deal when that flopped after the Make a Difference. So I was in Tennessee and
I liked that Sultan though. The Sultan was cool. I thought it was, I remember that the mask, you couldn't see your face and I thought it was really cool.
You know, that character, Chavo, I thought that was going to be the one to take me in, meaning a main event player into the house, you know, that name that go into worldwide household. But again, you know, in this industry, timing is everything. You know, that idea came from Vince McMahon. And we all know if Vince, you know, comes up with a character, he's going to make sure it gets over.
That's right.
And during that time, I believe, Bret Hart was switching. Mm-hmm. It was a baby face and he was turning heel. And, you know, I was already starting to work an angle with the Patriot, a guy from the Middle East.
Dale Wilkes.
Dale Wilkes. And so they stuck me with Sheik and Bob Backer.
Oh.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, that's what I said. Oh.
Sheiky baby. So, hey,
oh,
you got
man.
Some gimmick for the Sheik?
nonstop, boy. And so, you know, when that time came where, you know, with the Sultan get ready to, you know, run a deal with the Patriot, Bret switches heel.
Mm.
So when Bret switches heel, that top slot for me,
that's
right. I lost that.
He's the top. Yeah, for sure.
So I was killing people for 2 months nonstop on TV.
Right.
And then when Bret switched, they put me against, the Patriot, and they killed me in a matter like that. Boom.
Yeah.
Soon as they killed me, I was back on the shelf at home. So while I was at home, I signed a 4-year deal. And during the 90 days coming clause is going to be closed, they sent me to Memphis. And when I went to Memphis, I actually met Kurt Angle there.
Oh, really?
That's where Kurt Angle there. And Kurt was like, he just started. He's been working. You know, they had him training there in Memphis. And when I came in, I danced with Kurt, meaning I worked with Kurt on TV. And keep in mind, Bruce Pritchard and those guys off. They haven't seen me in a while. And when I came through, man, I was every bit of 425. I was 425, but I was still light on my feet, you know.
Wow.
And when that happened, after I worked with Kurt Angle, you know, we had a good match together. I was flying all over the place for Kurt at that size. But, you know, you go out there and you make the new talent, you know.
That's right.
And when I came back, you know, Bruce came to me, Bruce Pritchard, and he just kind of dropped a seed in my ear and, you know, mentioned that, you know, that Vince want to talk to me. They got an idea.
That mature Samoan ass kicked in, right?
You're damn right.
And then all of a sudden, boom. Yeah, trust me. I've seen it. Yeah.
So, you know, now I had one strike would make a difference, right? Mm-hmm. And then I come back with the Sultan. There was another ball drop. I had three times now. Okay, what's this one now? Yeah. And then finally when we went through and they kind of, you know, the birth of the Rikishi character, you know, I was kind of like, I was iffy at first, Chavo, to be honest, because, you know, I didn't want to, you know, do a ripoff of my cousin, Yoko.
Right.
You know?
Yokozuna, your cousin, right?
And, yeah, right.
Who was over. Yeah.
The mighty one.
Yes,
and, you know, when we got there and, you know, Vince talked to me about and Bruce, like, they've always wanted to do this character with Yoko, but he wanted to do it to where he wanted the real sumo, you know, gear.
Right.
Meaning butts out and stuff like that, you know, like a shoot type of a sumo. Now, for me, here's where my old school, you know, I've been through it now. I figured this game out.
Right.
My sole focus, Kishi, 90 days, your contract's up. They're coming to you with another opportunity. How are we going to play this game?
That's right.
And so I'm looking at what I got at home. You know, I'm looking at my kids at home. I got more kids now. I got to do what I got to do to keep this thing going in the back of the nest. Those were my drive and my focus. And I believed in my work to where they put anything in front of me, I'm going to make it work as long as they do their part and put fire behind it.
That's right.
Here comes that other opportunity, Chavo. I get in there. We see the character. I looked at the joint. And then I put them on ice because I seen the thong. I seen everything hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
I put them on ice and said, give me a week to think about this and I'll get back to you. So I go home. I sit my family down. And, you know, my kids were in high school back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I had some in elementary. You know how ruthless kids can be at school. They talk about each other's parents. And
that's right.
Blah, blah. So I just had that dog, you know, listen, I got a chance to get re-signed. But not on a new character.
Right.
And this is what this, so I pull out, you know, these strong, those drawings.
Yeah. Dad, that's a thong. You're wearing a thong, exactly. The thong. Here's my new song.
Exactly that. I pull it out. You know, it's sitting there, man. All right. You know, it wasn't even, not really a discussion. You can tell. It's all good. You know?
They got it.
To you. We're
they
good.
Understood it. Yeah. This is wrestling. Let's make it
again,
work.
Again. Those same thing how we grew up. They've been around it all their life. They've seen their father a different character, different, you know, the kids at home. So they see that just like how we did with our parents,
right,
and our uncles. So it was a no-brainer, you know. So once I got that to where it was, you know, solid, you know, feedback in my mind before I called these people, like, this is it. This was my last chance. That I felt if this thing here doesn't work for me, I'm done. Mm-hmm. Meaning there's no more, you know, I'm kind of burnt out. That's what it was, you know?
Sure.
And when that happened, man, they gave me the drawing and then I kind of just wanted a few things different. I wanted the blonde hair to kind of separate myself.
That was your idea, the blonde hair?
Yeah.
Okay.
I told him I want the blonde hair and separate myself from, you know, from Yoko, from looking alike,
right?
You know, that. And then I didn't have no, you know, problem wearing the thong, you know what I mean? And then, you know, adding in the dance and stuff like that, I thought because I used to dance in back in the day in Pier 39 in the Bay Area.
Right.
I used to dance for money back in the day. And right, so yeah. That.
Well, you got rhythm. You can tell you got rhythm out there. So
So for me, it was like, you know, I got to beat him. And then entertain the fans.
Right.
And so, you know, that's what happened there. It kind of, we got stuck together with Tuku.
That's right.
And that was kind of funny because you have two white boys with a Samoan, bleach blonde Samoan cat, 400 pounds, you know, and then we out there, you don't see that. You know what I mean? And when we got the opportunity, I think it was Sunday Night Heat, the other show they had back in the day, we did like a dark match. where me, Scotty, and they just threw us out there. Dude, when we came out there, now, nobody's seen me with this new gimmick on, you know? And it was so much built up to me, like, damn, man. You know, if the fans don't like you, they'll let you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And when I came out, they kind of knew it was me because, you know, they see it was my face, it was me, but what I was wearing.
Right.
Right? And when I got in that corner, man, and I took that damn sumo skirt off.
Yeah.
You can almost hear the whole arena go, whoa.
Right.
What the hell? That vibe.
Right.
It's like the arena got hot. You can hear a damn penny drop on the ground.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, I got their attention now. In my mind, I wasn't going to change the way I work.
Right.
I was still going to work Head Shrinker style, meaning vicious, get out there and just annihilate. But I wanted to also show that a 400-pound, 25-pound man can also move light on his feet.
Super kicking mofo out there.
Right? Part of you getting over if you're coming. Like, this is it for me. This is my last character, and I'm going to bring everything I got. And so, you know, that first time we came up, did the Sunday night heat. Chavo, I don't think I was there on Sunday night for like 2 weeks. Before you know it, I was on Monday Night Raw, and they just start to, you know, you can feel it. As soon as we got on Monday Night Raw, automatically the fans would just start, they caught on fire, you know?
Was the dance right there? Was it already with the lights out and stuff? Did that evolve?
Oh, that evolved. Hey, we added all, you know, on the house shows. We tried different things on the house shows. And then
it
we bring
so it. So good. It was so good. I remember watching that because we were in WCW and watching it. That's when the Attitude Era started getting over. And because at first we were, you know, kind of beating WWF's butt for a while. And then Attitude changed. You guys started doing all the Shock TV and you guys came out with Too Cool. And I was like, oh man, here it goes, man.
Yeah, it was just,
I was like, okay, WCW, see you later.
You know,
it
was like a pretty cool, pretty cool trio, man. You know,
when you became entertaining, bro, that's when you hooked them all because you could already work. And then all of a sudden you guys became super entertaining. You made them laugh.
Right.
They entertained them. That was over. So what happened to me and Eddie, we were heels and they hated us. They hated us. We didn't change our style at all.
Right.
Except those vignettes aired, those light cheat steel vignettes aired.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden from 1 week to the next, we were heels. Mm-hmm. And next week we were baby faces. And
it was entertaining. It was exciting. They already knew you guys can work, but we were just looking for that. And really, that was just you guys going, just being you, doing your daily thing.
The stuff,
man,
that
you know?
We were doing backstage. Yeah. And as we walked back, we walked out, man. And all of a sudden they cheered us. Me and Eddie looked at each other and went, oh shit, we're baby faces. Oh man. All right, let's do this. You know,
do you ever have that conversation like with people that are in creative control that are writing the storylines, like how they put different people with the different talent, you know? And so when they had the different talent, creative people come to us back in the day, I've been through so much that I've learned to take control. Absolutely. You know, I had the one guy before I was talking to somebody else, you know, running our storylines and blah, blah, blah. And I give my input. Next, you know, another guy came to me and I asked him, what's your name? He says, oh, I'm but I'm the new guy that's writing for you. I said, you ever watch professional wrestling? Have you ever watched me wrestle? He says, no. I said, well, you won't be writing for me.
Yeah, right. Smart.
You know, and I would have never said anything like that back in the day because, you know, I'm just starting. But as you go through, you know, the different, you know, stuff in the industry, different characters, trying to find it, you learn to really, like, take control and understand, like, you know, you deserve this right. Right. I have a voice in there because your ass is not the one out there taking the bumps. I'm the one that's out there taking the bumps. So if I'm out there doing the work, but damn it, I should have at least 99% of the say-so. And the 1% would come from Vince McMahon.
That's right. And what's cool about that is that you know that if it falls flat, hey, okay, I can blame myself. But you know what's going to get over and what's not going to get over. As long as the company will get behind it and give you that little push. That's all you need is that little bit. Just give me a chance. Let me get this over. Right.
Because you know, if they come up with something and shit goes good, yeah, they'll take the credit.
Right.
But if shit goes bad, they're nowhere to be found. The heat comes on to you.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I was like, okay, man. So, you know, during the Rikishi character, as that run, you know, start going as a baby face, they broke me off from that trio and had me in the singles and so forth. I was starting to get some real good steam of Chavo. So confident wise, I said, okay, man, this is starting to fall right in place now, you know?
Right.
And then, you know, to be able to, you know, dance with the greats of The Rock, Stone Cold, you know, Undertaker, Triple H, Kurt Angle, Edge. Now my schedule and my booking involves all these guys here.
Right.
So you know how that feeling is. All right, now I'm damn figured in now.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then
now where did the stink face come into play?
A house show.
Because I took that shit about 100 times, about 1,000 times.
So let me take the stink face was actually a rib.
Mm-hmm.
When I first got that character, you kind of know who your real friends are in this industry.
Yeah, you do.
Right. So I'm walking by with this whole character. Keep in mind, a lot of guys, the boys haven't seen me in a minute. I've been gone for a while. So I come through and they see me walking down, you know, Terry's, you know, trying to fix my thong and fix all my gear. But I'm walking through and you know how the boys hang out in the hallway.
Yeah.
You can hear a couple of, you know, you can feel it like that.
People under their vehicles like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I was like, oh, okay. You know, so they think it's a joke, right?
Right.
And so, you know, I said, I'm like, okay, I got it. I got like it.
That one.
Yeah. That I start picking them out, Oos.
Yeah.
Start picking them out. And so they'd put me against, you know, those job matches with the guys that helped me, you know, get me over on TV, right?
Right.
They would always start to lay them in there on those guys, right? So I knew then that's going to be my weapon. That's going to be my comeback to all these motherfuckers that kind of smirk and talk shit behind my back. You know, but as soon as they see me on TV, start killing them with the stink face, they knew shit was about ready to happen now. So whenever I knew I'm working with somebody,
it changed different.
It changed real quick. Man, can you see that? Man, that's great, man. Your gimmick is hot. Blah, blah.
That's awesome.
I was like, all right, motherfucker, you're one of those guys that smirk. You know what I mean?
Right,
anyhow, the you know, that was that at TV. But the birth of the stink face when I first done it was actually to guess the Boss Man. Great trailer, and it happened
he was so good.
I you know what, I want to give him credit, and I said this before, that you know, when we worked a house show, you know, you can relax, Chavo, at a house show when you're working with somebody.
And Big Ray, man, was so smooth.
He was
so good.
You can barely feel guys. Those are guys you want to work with all the time.
Absolutely.
So he took a bump. I don't know what he did. I did something to him, a clothesline or something. But he took a bump in the corner with stink face position, what it's called today. And I'm actually looking the opposite way. And all I can hear is like, you know, 15,000 sold out in Mobile, Alabama. And all I can hear is some voice, Rikishi! Rikishi!
Yeah.
Turn around and stick your butt in his face! And that's where that slow look come from, where I'm turning.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
I can hear it, so it must be at front row.
Right.
And I'm turning around trying to find it. And as I turn around, like I'm looking, and I'm looking at Ray, you know your instinct. You can hear it.
That's right.
That pop is starting to rise.
Yeah, that's right.
So then I turn it, and I took one step. Chavo, it got louder. I took another step. And now I caught on to it. I was like, I was trying to walk fast. I was like, slow down, motherfucker. They're coming.
Take your time. Hey, take your time.
You can bet you I walk like a damn turtle over there. By the time I got there, and it was just off the roof now. It was the loudest pop I've ever heard in my career.
Wow.
And when I turned around, all I can hear was this voice from Ray Traylor. Turn around, baby. We got him now. Go ahead and stick that booty in my face. Stick that booty in my Man, I dropped it on. I said, I've never done it before.
Right.
And I said, okay, brother, here it comes. Turn sideways.
I'm doing it. Yeah.
I tell him to turn sideways. Man, he went straight up the thong. Hey, we've been going 15 minutes. I'm sweaty and everything, right? Oh. I know. And then boom, when I hit it, Chavo, it was the whole freaking thing erupted. Came back, he sold and laid down and said, give me the bonsai now. He didn't even bump anymore. He just slid in position. I gave him a bonsai, 1, 2, 3. Before, that was on a Sunday. The following Monday, it was boring on Monday Night Raw.
Well, you can't get him any higher than that right there. It's finished. Just go home right there. That's it. So, you know, I had taken stink face, Eddie had taken stink face. And one time, I don't know what it was, we did the double stink face. But we realized real fast, because if I was a single stink face in the middle, I got the butthole right in my face. But if it was the double, I just got the cheeks. Yeah. So every time, I don't know if you noticed, I'm sure you did, but we were like, hey, man, why don't we do the double stink face? Like, we'll both, like, I'll go down and then he'll come down and we'll do the double. Yeah, yeah, all right. And we're like, that was us going, all right, cool.
But you guys were always
smart.
That's what I think about the Guerreros. They can come with a finish to the Guerreros. The Guerreros are switching up like they're getting the same thing, but they're not.
That's right, totally. And it was even better. I mean, people popped even more, and it was better for everybody. I remember, like, sometimes, like, we'd be at house shows or even sometimes at TVs, and, you know, sometimes you guys would go over, like, the match, the TV's done, but you're still in the ring doing stuff.
Yeah.
And then we would just start running in and taking finishes and stuff. And I remember that. I go, oh, that's it. I'm running in. I'm taking, because you were in the ring and you were getting stink facing everybody. And then I came in and you gave me a big super kick or whatever. I go, super kick, boom, right in the corner, boom. And you just did that turn.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was so fun, man. Yeah, those are some of the best times, man. I miss those times.
It was so, I mean, when we all did our thing back in the day, man. You know, I went through a phase where they brought different talent, you know, after my matches, that we'd all dance. For me, that was fun because we never see, you know, different talent dance.
Right.
And this was a time to kind of showcase their dancing skills. And man, I'd sit there, I watched D-Von and Bubba dance. I was like, damn, Bubba can dance and D-Von can't, but D-Von's black and Bubba's white.
Yeah.
What the hell's wrong with this here?
right. And then, bro, we would be overseas, and then you'd finish the shows with you in the ring, and we'd all be in the ring, and we'd start doing some dancing with you. Oh, man, it was people pop so much. Nobody, the show's over. Nobody left. There'd be 10,000 people that are still sitting there just dancing and watching the show. It was so great, man.
That's that magic that you want to find, right, Chavo?
That's right.
When you find that magic right there, that's when you know, okay, I'm finally in here now, you know?
That's it.
And so at the end of the day, man, it's just, you know, people that are out there in this industry, you know, we talk about our stories, and hopefully the listeners that are listening can take something away from this. Like, it's fun memories for us, it's sad memories, it's hard memories. But at the end of the day, you never quit, man. You never quit. You have that knowledge, and you take that knowledge with you that's given to you and utilize it to be able to move forward.
Right.
Yeah.
Brother, you and I could talk all day
long. I know it.
And this would be a 3-hour podcast, so maybe we'll do a part two. But before we leave on Suplex and Cervezas, we always do a rapid fire question things at the end. And basically there's no right or wrong answer. I ask you a few questions and you tell me which one you like better or which one you don't. It's just for your fans to get to know you better. You down?
All right. I'm down.
All right, man. Okay. So were you, being a wrestler, and I like ask all wrestlers the same ones, were you a Cracker Barrel guy or were you a Waffle House guy?
Waffle House,
man. We were on the road, man, like crazy. And that was a savior, right?
Yep.
Okay. So are you rather like being a heel or a babyface?
Heel.
Heel. I'm the same way, bro. I love
it. It's easier.
Well, when you're a babyface, you got people cheering you, but there's always those assholes in the front row that are like, you still suck, you know? And you're like, but hey, you're supposed to like me, you know? Yeah. Right. But when you're a heel, everybody's chanting, you know, Chavo sucks or Rikishi sucks. Yeah. And there's always a few people going, yeah, we like the heels, but it was so easy to turn them against me. I'd look at them and go, yeah, I'm good. I don't need your help. Tell your mom I want my underwear back, you know. Right. And then they'd all hate you. It was,
yeah.
Are you a beer or wine guy?
I'm a wine guy.
Wine. All right.
Yeah.
Were you you're my age, so were you a Arnold Schwarzenegger guy or a Sylvester Stallone guy?
Ooh. First Blood. Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, man.
One of my favorite movies.
Me too.
Yeah.
All right, man. You love music and you're a good rapper yourself. Are you Biggie or Tupac?
Tupac.
Tupac, straight up, right?
West Coast. Yeah.
Were you in that same genre, were you a Prince or Michael Jackson guy? There it is.
MJ, Michael Jackson.
Right? Okay. Were you a Ali or Tyson?
Ali,
man. I tell you what, as much as I love Mike, and Mike was killing it, but it's got, even he says he loved Ali, you know?
The GOAT.
Yeah, that's right. Growing up, were you, did you like the NWA better or the WWF better?
WWF.
Okay. Are you a classic car guy or a new car guy?
Classic,
that's right. I'm saying, man, the classic.
64 right. Chevy Impala.
I got the 6.3, man. I got the 6.3 SS Impala convertible, baby.
Yes, sir.
And last one, are you an MMA or boxing guy?
I'm a boxer.
Because we're all fans of the square circle. Anything that happens in the rings, we're kind of...
Yeah, that's kind of a tough one for me.
Right.
I'm going to have to just cut that through the middle.
Middle, yeah. You're right, totally. Brother, dude, it's been so awesome talking to you.
Yep.
Tell them what they got going on now. I know you got Knox Pro, your training facility, right?
Yeah, so, you know, you guys can stop by. We run a wrestling academy. It's knoxpro.com. That's KNOKXPRO.com. And also, we got a few live shows that are coming out. And it'll be July the 17th, and I'll put it out on my social media. You guys can follow me on IG at Rikishi, the verified page. Also at The Real Rikishi on Twitter, and also Rikishi on Facebook. All verified. So make sure you can follow all the updates. You can just go to our website, knoxpro.com. That's KNOKXPRO.com. And you see all the info. If you think you have what it takes to be a professional wrestler, I want you to stop by. We're here in Los Angeles, right here in Van Nuys, California. And just, you know, stop by. I'll give you a free day tryout, and then we'll go from there. But
And their shows are excellent, man. I've been a part of a few of those shows. Yeah. And really, really good shows. Quality wrestling. You go out, you put out a great product, bro. You really do.
Yeah, you could just have them. You know, we run every Tuesday night. We actually have a show every Tuesday on Facebook Live and on Twitch at Knox Pro.
Awesome.
And so a lot of, with the pandemic that hit, Chavo, you know, a lot of the independent kids that wasn't having a place to go work. Because no promoters was taking a chance. So what we did, we'd open up our platform for a lot of independent kids to come out here and to get, you know, shine the light on them. And then we stream it live on Twitch, on our Knox Pro account. So, you know, my life now, to sum it up, is just to be able to give him back to the business and having these kids understand the ins and outs of professional wrestling. And just to hope to be able to fulfill their dream and, to kind of utilize what they have today to their best advantage. But, you know, they got to understand it's not what they see on TV. We're not PlayStation wrestlers. You know, that ring and that 3/4 plywood, that steel pose, it hurts. You know, a lot of us has been damaged, you know, from our bodies, from broken bones. But for these kids, they need to understand what it is to be able to survive this industry.
You got to teach them right. If anybody listen here and you want to get trained correctly, you give Knox Pro a call. You get to be in the ring with Rikishi and his trainers, and they're A class, first class pros for sure. You got your brands, your Samoan Dynasty and your Ultimate Oos. What can they get that?
They can just go on the same website. Everything is at Knox Pro.
Same thing.
com. Just go down to the shop, and it's just that one-stop shop and the website, and, you know, everything you want to know about the Dynasty and Knox Pro.
And brother, I got to tell you, congratulations on the Hall of Fame, the WWE Hall of Fame class of what, 2015?
Thank you, Javo. Yeah.
Bro, when you got it, man, it was like all of us get it, man. We're like, yes.
Yeah.
One of our boys, man. So great, man. Love it, brother. I love you, brother. Thank you so much for taking the time, jumping on the podcast with me, Suplex and Cervezas. And people love it because it's like us being in, they're like in the backseat on a road trip, you know? So I appreciate you jumping on with me, man, and shooting the shit because, man, we don't get to hang out as much as we'd like anymore.
Well, I'm here. You know where to find me, Uso. And again, congratulations on all your success. Congratulations on the show. And also in Hollywood, man. You know, keep knocking them doors down and keep doing what you're doing. I love you, man. Thanks.
I love you too, man. Thank you again. And one last thing. Viva la raza.
Get his pants on.